You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Kevin Freeman, a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy, the author of two best-selling books, Secret Weapon and Game Plan. He is one of the country's foremost experts on the phenomenon of global economic warfare, this name of his blog postings at globaleconomicwarfare.com. He is an extraordinary resource, and we're always delighted to have with him each week. Kevin, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Great to be here, Frank.
I want to talk first and foremost, Kevin, about Bitcoin. We touch on it a lot because there seems to be a growing sense that it will emerge as an important currency in the world, in perhaps the future, even a reserve currency. Who knows? But I'm especially struck by an interest that has been taken lately by some very bad actors, one of them being Iran. And the other being Venezuela, not so much in Bitcoin, but I guess in getting its own cyber currency. You've warned about North Korea minting, that is to say, counterfeiting Bitcoins. Give us sort of the lay of the land as you see it at the moment on this so-called cyber currency or cryptocurrency operation.
Well, it is a fact that that every nation of the world is going to have to deal with the idea that currency might not be in the form of paper, it might be in the form of ones and zeros, but it might be in the blockchain, which is that very sophisticated technology where everybody is acknowledging it and it's kept in cyberspace. It's the basis for Bitcoin, which of course has been a dramatic dramatic valuation increase this year, and it's now valued somewhere north of $11,000, where a few years ago it was worth pennies. And it's the idea that perhaps a government can get in on this action. It's not completely in the private sector. And so the Russians have gotten in and said they're going to create their own crypto ruble. Now Venezuela has acknowledged that they're going to develop their cryptocurrency, which is important because their paper currency is worth nothing. And the Iranians have said that they would even accept traditional Bitcoin. And so this is becoming something that's being embraced by enemies of freedom and friends of freedom alike. And it's something that's not going away.
Should we be concerned that these enemies of freedom in particular are getting into this? And especially, Kevin, you tantalized me a couple of weeks ago when you talked about the North Koreans, as I say, being able to essentially defraud the Bitcoin blockchain security system somehow. It sounds as though that would be a serious problem for Bitcoin, is it not?
Well, there are multiple serious problems for Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency. And when you mention North Korea, you generally were talking about electromagnetic pulse. And that's important because those who here embrace Bitcoin and are concerned about the future of the U.S. dollar and so forth, their one big worry is that if we didn't have a power grid, we have no access to cryptocurrencies. And so the North Koreans might want us, the world, to adopt it because then they would have the ability to shut it off. But they've also been hacking Bitcoin. They've hacked it from South Korea, and they're possibly developing their own.
I guess I'm raising the question to you, if the North Koreans can hack the blockchains of Bitcoin, surely other more sophisticated nations should be able to do the same. And if the whole premise of the currency is that it has this unbeatable cryptologic lock on it, I don't get how it could retain its value, Kevin Freeman. Am I missing something here?
Well, what they're hacking is essentially the wallets that contain the Bitcoin. They're not necessarily hacking the blockchain itself and breaking that down, although with quantum computing, something the Chinese are developing, that's a very real risk. What they're hacking is the wallets where you keep that configuration, that coin that's got the number that identifies you as the holder of that. If they can steal that number, it's like stealing your credit card number and using it. So that's a very real risk. And how you protect once you've established that you own this, how do you protect and maintain that it's yours? And we've seen companies go bankrupt because they weren't able to hold on to the coins.
Got it. Well, this is fascinating, and we will be returning to it with you, Kevin Freeman, often, I'm sure, in the weeks ahead. Let me ask you about another issue involving the internet, and that is the Russians are reportedly now going to set up their own domain name system. which of course has been sort of the DNA, I guess you'd call it, of the internet. What is the likelihood that that will happen? And if so, that there will be some kind of independent internet for the so-called BRIC nations, Brazil, India, China, South Africa, as well as Russia, that will compete with the other internet or perhaps make more likely attacks on our internet in the confident expectation that they'll have their own that will be able to function with impunity.
This was a topic that we brought up and we talked about at length a year or so ago when we were giving away the ICANN, the domain naming, to the international body. Now, Russia's just proving our point. They want their own naming conventions that they can have as a backup at a minimum because they don't trust the international body. We shouldn't have trusted it either. We should have maintained control of ICANN. And Russia developing this says that if we got into a serious conflict and that body was opposed to them, in the form of sanctions or whatever, that they want to have the ability to continue to operate business as usual. And this is a very scary thing because it goes against this idea, well, you know, the internet belongs to everybody, we should all share it, and so America, you give up your control. And once we've done that, now the Russians are developing alternatives because they might be willing to take down that control in some way, harm it, go against it, or whatever. They're just proving the point we made a year ago.
Yeah, I hate to say we told you so, but there it is, and it's a very troubling prospect, needless to say. Kevin, let me turn finally to one other issue. One of my favorite institutions in the world is named after one of my favorite bosses, Henry Scoop Jackson. The Henry Jackson Society in the United Kingdom has recently published a report that provides the latest evidence that the Persian Gulf nation of Qatar is still very much in the business of supporting terrorist groups and other Sharia supremacist enterprises like the Muslim Brotherhood. What do we know about this study and its findings, and how much should it further reinforce what seemed to me to be a good idea to begin with, which is the idea of helping the Saudis, the Egyptians, the UAE, and others push back against the Qataris, sanction them or punish them in other ways?
Well, we've been experiencing an information operations war between the Qataris and Turkey and Iran and on the other side, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and so forth. And Qatar's been proclaiming, we have nothing to do with terror. Those are all old links. And yet they maintain the same very prominent players, including Yusuf Qaradawi, who was mentioned specifically in the report, and someone that I ran across that was directly tied to the financial crisis of 2008 with statements like all the wealth is ours, meaning his brand of Islam. So they're absolutely right. The terror continues. The bad actors are still in place. There's been no real change in response to the Saudi Arabian boycotts. There's very little response. They've just stood their ground and continued to tell us that they're not connected to terror. And this report proves otherwise.
Yeah, and gives lie to the memorandum of understanding that Rex Tillerson signed with the Qataris, seemingly confirming that they were back in our good graces. Ain't so. Kevin Freeman, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you so much for your time today, as well as for the great work that you do at globaleconomicwarfare.com and with us at the Center for Security Policy, where you are our senior fellow. Thank you so much, Kevin. Come back to us again next week. Next up, we'll speak with Colonel Joe Martin, a veteran of the Kennedy Special Warfare School, in the aftermath of reports that its standards are being changed in a way that could be highly detrimental. That and more straight ahead.